Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm your host, Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today, we're joined by Dr. Catherine Wheeler. Dr. Catherine Wheeler is a retired obstetrician, gynecologist, and a former abortionist. She is now a prominent member and board member of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which we call APLOG, and speaks publicly about abortion, life-affirming medicine, and the hope of redemption found in Christ Jesus. Her story is one of truth, courage, and God's grace, and we're grateful to have her with us today. Dr. Wheeler, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. What a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I'd like to start with you. You grew up in a large, devout Baptist family as the ninth of 11 children. What was faith like in your home growing up, and how did that shape your early view of life and medicine?
Yeah, thank you. So my father is actually a Baptist pastor. So I grew up in a pastor's home. My mom and dad were the real deal. They were human parents. They did the best they could with everything going on. They were great parents. I remember my mom waking up very early in the morning, and I thought it was to pray to get through the day. But I now realize as a real Christian that she just loved Jesus. That woman loved Jesus, as did my father. So very faith-filled, very, just like the Bible says, in a very loving way.
That's good. That's good. So you've been very open about the season in your life where you walked away from the Lord during college. What was happening in your heart during that time, and how did these choices begin to shift your spiritual foundation?
Yeah. Do you know, I just don't think growing up in the 60s and 70s, I just don't think people knew what all of this meant. You know, it was the middle of civil rights and the women's movement, sexual revolution, the entrance of an acceptance of drugs. I just don't think they knew to prepare us for what we were going to face in college. Yeah. And I also would say I didn't have a personal relationship with Jesus. I'd been baptized. I went to church. I was frankly incredibly innocent. But I think that innocence made me very vulnerable and without a real relationship with Jesus. So, you know, the opportunity that came up with a boyfriend, and I think for a lot of young people, that's where we need to be preparing them, that this is going to come up.
Yeah.
And this is why we wait until marriage, because it's something so beautiful that God designed. We don't want to give that away. We want healthy relationships, and it reflects Jesus in the church. I mean, that's a beautiful image when you see people reflecting Jesus and his bride. So I just wasn't prepared for that. And I'll take personal responsibility. Facing this, I got hold of somebody who wasn't a Christian.
Yeah.
And they, of course, said what the world says. Sex is no big deal. You go to Planned Parenthood and get on the pill. And, you know, for some of us, it's a very quick path down from there. And for me, it was a very quick spiral down. So I knew in that moment that I was walking away from God. I knew that I was making that choice, probably not as deeply as I should have known. But that was the beginning of me going totally off path.
Yeah, I can relate to you in so many ways. Grew up in church, just like you. I mean, we were at the church every time the doors open, we were there. And I can't say that I had a personal relationship. You know, I was on the Bible quiz team and knew all the Bible verses, but I didn't have a personal relationship with the Lord until later in my life. And like you said, you know, I went to college as well. And, you know, you don't have your parents there to help you make those decisions or put those boundaries in place. And I do think it's very important that we start to talk to our children sooner than later. Because we may think that they're getting it just because of the life that we're living. But if we're not having those conversations with them about sex and about relationships and about marriage, the voices in the world and other people have a stronger pull on them than what they see perhaps in the house. And so I would agree with you. We need to start those conversations a lot sooner. So as you entered medical school and then OBGYN residency, how was abortion framed, especially when it came to difficult prenatal diagnoses?
So this would have now been in the mid-1980s, and then I finished residency in 1991. And I think, you know, I was in the South for medical school. I was in New Orleans. And, you know, there we didn't actually ever talk about abortion that I can recall. It wasn't done at Charity Hospital, which is where I trained, and at Tulane. So it just never honestly came up. Mm-hmm. But when I moved to Utah for residency is the first time I remember it actually coming up. And, you know, the framing at the University of Utah, abortions were not done for so-called elective reasons, meaning this is not a good time or situation. What it was done for specifically was babies with special needs. Mm-hmm. And so that discussion was, as I recall, it was, you know, this is a really difficult situation. It's up to the woman to choose. She has the right to choose. You know, this is really hard on her. And it's one of the things that we do in medicine. And if we care about women, it's one of the ways that we help. And it really was framed in that helping, you're helping. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think women are incredibly vulnerable to that. Mm-hmm. And especially coming through the 60s and 70s, where women were really starting to come into more equality, mm-hmm. that somehow we were really more vulnerable to that narrative of help.
Yeah, I think that same mindset is there today that, we so often hear women's health care, and that's important to us, and it should be important, but it's sometimes misused. The language is misused to not necessarily help women's health, but to promote abortions. So you said in the past that during your residency, you opted into abortion training and ultimately performed abortions, many of them second term procedures. Can you explain to our listeners what it meant to opt into abortion training and what that experience was like as a student?
So opting in means that at the time I trained, you actually had a choice whether you wanted to enter into that. So you were not required to do training. They've actually changed it since the mid-2010s to make it a requirement of our training that we be trained in doing abortions. So it's now, you know, they worked hard to make people think this is essential healthcare. Mm-hmm. So now, if you are opposed to participating in that, you actually have to go to your superiors and say, I won't do it, I'll opt out. And you can imagine that for a lot of people is difficult. Additionally, these are the people who write your recommendations. Yeah. They're the ones who evaluate you. Your future may depend on how they evaluate you. So there's a lot of pressure there.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. For the doctors, nurses, and medical students listening right now who may feel conflicted, afraid of pressure to conform, what would you want them to know? How would you counsel them?
Yeah, you know, I think the narrative has so taken hold that we so disregard that there's a baby involved. Mm-hmm. That I think you have to really think about it in advance before you get into that situation. And my encouragement, you know, being involved in abortion and even seeing one changes you. Like you can't unsee what you've seen. I've had a lot of nurses approach me who didn't know that they could say, I won't do this. Mm-hmm. And it changed their life forever. Yeah. And so I would really strongly encourage medical professionals in training to just make a commitment. I will never be involved in the taking of a life, whether it has anything to do with abortion, recommending abortion, or on the other end of life, which is becoming more, you know, it all goes that direction. You know, which lives do we consider less valuable?
Mm-hmm. I like the recommendation to make, I mean, first make the decision and stand firm on it. And be prepared to ask or answer the questions before you get there.
That's right. And you don't know who you're encouraging by doing that, because so many people are afraid to stand because it is hard. There are consequences. But the number of times when people say something, it encourages the people around them to at least think about it. Yeah. And secondly, it helps other people to step into that and go, actually, I won't do it either.
Yeah, it's good. Good. Be a voice. Dr. Willett, many people assume doctors who perform abortions are heartless or evil, But you challenge that stereotype. Yeah, I'm you know, enjoying getting to know you a bit, and so I don't look at you as being heartless or evil. But from your experience, what are some common misperceptions about physicians who perform abortions?
Yeah, you know, I want to be careful about how I say this, but I'm going to quote Orrin Hern, who is an abortionist in Colorado who just retired in his late 80s. He said, and I agree with him, that there are people who do it out of compassion or out of ideology. They truly believe they're helping women, at least at the beginning. And then on the other side are people who just are in it for the money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the so-called abortion mills is what some people call them. But even the first big time abortionist, Bernard Nathanson, like he talked about that just assembly line, like you're literally like cows walking through uncared for, just how quickly can I do this one after another, after another, after another. And abortionists, you know, abortion is very lucrative. And so I do think there are two classes. I think there are people who literally are doing it because it's so lucrative. Mm-hmm. And I think the large majority go into it at first really thinking that they're helping women and that it's a woman's right. And they're so convinced that we should be, this is the way we stand with women without thinking about the baby.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. And it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. God has been faithful to Assure Women's Center for over 40 years, and the story continues. Join us in Omaha on April 2nd, 2026 for Assure's 40th birthday banquet, featuring Tim Tebow as keynote speaker and Rich Bott as our MC. This will be one of the largest pro-life banquets in the country. We hope you'll join us as we remember yesterday and look ahead to how God will transform Assure's future. Learn more at firststeptolife.com.
Welcome back to Life Matters. Today we're talking with Dr. Catherine Wheeler, a former abortionist who now speaks publicly about abortion, life-affirming medicine, and God's redemptive grace. So what changed your mind about abortion?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if initially it was changing my mind. I hadn't, like most people, I hadn't really thought about abortion.
Yeah.
But I was actually in medical school the first time, residency the first time I saw one. And I don't even remember that first time. I think you shut it out. It's just awful. But I had finished training and had started in a private practice and decided I didn't really want to do abortions. But if one of my own patients came and asked me, I would. And very early in my practice, thank God, I actually started an abortion. And I was not a Christian at the time. So I didn't really have a good framework for what happened, but it was just like any other day in an operating room to me. And as I started, all I can say is everything went black around me. Mm-hmm. And so as I looked around, because you can imagine that's incredibly confusing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm like, what is going on? I'm looking at the people around me. And it's like everything's going on as if nothing weird's happening. They're all doing what they normally do. And I realize I'm the only person aware of this when I heard in my head, you're about to murder a baby. Mm. And it was just like the blinders came off. I did these procedures by ultrasound, so I would have seen the baby. Mm. And for the first time, thought about the baby.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking like, gosh, what do I do? Like, this is actually murder. I hadn't thought about, how could I not have thought about that? But now I've started. And so now what do you do? And it was, I decided I actually had to finish, not leave her life at risk. But I just remember how just awful that was to be so acutely aware that this was a baby I was killing. And, you know, as you can imagine, I'm like, well, who can I talk to? But I, you know, who do you talk to? Who would understand that? And so I just shut it off. I just pushed it down. So again, I didn't start by changing my mind. And it was a very long time later, about 15 years, when I became a Christian. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God in his grace started very gently mm-hmm. bringing it up and then started dealing with the false beliefs that I had that led me into that.
Yeah. So you said it took some years to, confront your pro-choice worldview. Why do you think that took so long? And what kept you holding on to those mental blinders?
Yeah. Tina, I think most of us like Francis Schaeffer said, that we catch our beliefs like we catch the flu. Like it's unexamined. You just, you get the ideas come in and that's all you know. And it takes really deep roots. So you have to have something that can conflicts with that. And it's that cognitive dissonance one after another that finally gets you to change your mind. So I know a lot of people don't understand, and I don't think you'll understand if you haven't been there, but you can at least hear and try to empathize. But there's such a deep narrative now, you know, 50 plus years past Roe, we don't talk about what abortion is and about the baby. We only talk about the one person, the woman, and about her rights, and you feel bad for her. And, you know, so they twist that compassion into something really dark. So it just takes a long time. And I think the other thing is when you've been involved in a really deep evil, and I'll call this evil, what I felt in that room was a very evil presence. I was very aware it was evil. And when you're involved in that, somehow you just keep justifying yourself. Like everybody else is bad, you know, but I'm not that bad of a person. Well, actually I am, you know, but so there's this, that can't possibly be me. And so it just takes a lot of work and a lot of confronting of your ideas with reality. And because God does it in a way that doesn't completely destroy us. So yeah, for me, it took a while. For others, it might be faster. I don't know, but it took a while.
Yeah. So what was your relationship like with the Lord between that moment when things went dark and then that moment when you really confronted your pro-choice worldview and changed things?
Yeah, you know, it was a really interesting time. After I walked away from God, some really scary things happened. In fact, I almost died at one point of anaphylaxis. I had some scary encounters, and every time something happened that I knew it was God's hand. So the whole time, like just that general love of God, that he kept letting me know he actually is real and alive, even as I rejected him. And so I really had to reach a pit to turn to him. So I, you know, I would tell people, no, I believe in God. Like, here's why I believe in God. I know there's a God. There's no way there's not a God. But again, it wasn't, oh, you know, I believe in Jesus, that he died for me, that he's risen, that he is our reality. And so I had to get into a pit with a husband leaving, my second husband, when I realized that like my whole life was just over at that point. And it was in that pit when the reality of my mom's faith came to me. And just knowing in that moment, like, God, there's nothing I can do. Help me. God, help me. And God spoke into it. He said, it's going to be hard, but you're going to be okay. And he put his spirit in me at that moment. Like, we make this whole big thing about what it looks like. But, you know, God will answer those prayers. And I knew that I was different in that moment. And that the only way, because my whole life had just collapsed and I knew it was going to be really dark for myself personally, that I knew the only way forward was with God. I just knew. And so everything from that moment forward was me. And I know God put that in me to chase after him, to open his word, to get me in a church, to get me in Celebrate Recovery for people with hurts, habits, and hangups, to get me to people who would confront in situations that would confront things for me. It's been a great ride. It's been like intense, but it's been the most beautiful thing in the world.
Absolutely. As you're talking, I'm just thinking about someone that might be listening, and you've had an extraordinary healing journey, and someone might be in that middle of their healing journey, whether it's from abortion or drug addiction or whatever. If there's a listener that's listening, that's going through that healing journey, what would you tell them?
Yeah. You know, the first thing that God showed me, which was so surprising, is that he literally took me out of a kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of the Son of his love. Like he showered his love on me, like, and he was so, and continues to be so real and present, you know, like a father, like a husband. When I read in Hosea 2 the first time about the husband, you know, like, she had not been faithful. And Jesus, like, I'm going to call you out to the desert to speak tenderly to you. and to restore you. I'm your husband. And it's like, wow, like, how could that possibly be? And so I think, you know, what I would say is, you know, the world says God condemns you and wants you to be perfect. What Jesus says is, I love you so much that I pursued you your whole life. I never left you. I pursued you. And I died for everything that you did. You don't have to earn anything. Yeah. I died for that. It's over. I finished it. The evil one can't come after you anymore. You are a new creation in Christ. Mm-hmm. You don't have to earn your way home. He's right there. And it's just a simple call out. God help. God, I want you. Yeah.
That's good. That's good. So I would just say, if someone's listening and you need to be healed or in the middle of that healing journey, just keep pressing on. God is there. He won't leave us or forsake us. He said, admit your ways to him, trust him, and he will help. Just cry out for help when he's there to help.
That's right.
Now, you shared that God reminded you first of the two babies you lost in miscarriage and the hope of seeing them again in heaven. And then he spoke words that completely undid you. You'll see the babies you aborted. What was happening in your heart at that moment?
Yeah, you know, that was part of Celebrate Recovery for people with hurts, habits, and hangups. And, you know, I think we all have things that we've pushed down. And God cared about the fact that when I lost these two babies, I was in an abusive marriage, my first marriage, and I never grieved those babies. I just like, man, I got to keep going. You know, I mean, I literally had a treatment with no anesthesia so I could get back to work. So, for God to say, I want you to grieve those babies with me. Yeah. So I went from this high point of God saying, you're actually going to meet the babies that you lost to miscarriage. So I went from this unbelievable high to, and you're going to meet the babies that you aborted. And, but you know, God didn't leave me there. Like, that is the most crushing thing. And it should be. But he immediately said, and they love you. And that is the whole basis of Jesus. It's like, we can't make up for that. But there's this forgiveness, even in these babies. You know, and I'll tell you, when I first started speaking, which I originally said, no, I'm not going to do that. And God's like, well, let's have some conversations about this. But, and some other things. But when I, you know, in prayer, I'm like, well, what would the babies want me to say? And he said, first, it hurt. And secondly, we forgive you. And that was so clear, you know, that's the message. Like, these poor little ones, I mean, the poor moms too, who are deceived and abandoned and lied to, but the poor babies and just what they suffer in the fact that they're forgiven and, you know, that they've forgiven us. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you know, I think about Matthew, I think it's in 18 or 19, like all these images of Jesus, how much he loves the children, and keeps calling them and blessing them and touching them and holding them. Mm-hmm. And one version says, the heavens are full of such as these.
Yeah.
And like, just the flash image to me is this, just in America alone, 63 million babies, the heaven is full of, and that doesn't even touch the world. But they've forgiven us. Mm. We don't have to be afraid of that.
Yeah. You know, I think some days when things are hard here at Assure, and we know the young lady has had an abortion, that's one of the things that's soothing for me, just to know that baby's in the arms of Jesus. Because we have to think, you know, figure out how do we move forward? How do we get beyond where we are? And that's the one thing sometimes that often comforts me, that baby's in the arms of Jesus.
He is, and he or she is. But, you know, I think, like, I've heard that from somebody excusing abortion. Like, it's not that big of a deal. They just go in the arms of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would add to that in Matthew 25, and also with Paul, with his conversion, that God makes it clear, Jesus makes it clear, whatever you're doing to the least of these, or not doing, you're actually doing personally to me.
Absolutely.
That image of actually aborting Jesus, which is what the devil tried to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To Moses, and then tried to take out Jesus as infanticide, and now what he's doing now globally. So it does matter to God, and it is comforting.
Absolutely.
It is comforting that they're in Jesus' arms. I agree with both of those.
Yeah. Wow. Many people wonder how someone can move forward after participating in an abortion. When God showed you that he had forgiven you, how did that truth begin to change your ability to live free from shame?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think the first thing is the evil one doesn't want us to know that it's complete. Mm-hmm. And my first experience was, you know, nobody talked about it. Mm-hmm. And so I continued to carry a lot of shame for a long time. And figured if nobody talks about it, then I'm the worst of the worst. You know, I've said publicly before, I'm a Nuremberg doctor. I did what was told, and that's what abortion is. You know, it's no excuse. So, you know, it took a long time. One of my healing points was going to a pregnancy center the first time when I lived temporarily in Spokane, and thought, you know, maybe I could help out and volunteer, but I had to tell the director, Sherry, about my past. I'm like, you should know this about me. Very gracious. And she says, well, you know, we'd love for you to volunteer, but you need to do an abortion recovery program. And I can remember saying to her, oh, no, I know I'm forgiven. And she's like, oh, Catherine, it's so much deeper than that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a big part. This forgiven and set free is what I did one-on-one with somebody. And to be able to actually let myself see more of, you know, because you keep not letting yourself see, it's too hard to see. So to go deeper into what I'd actually done, but then also to honor the babies whose lives I took.
Please join us next week for part two of our interview with Catherine Wheeler. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby, as well as find our most current broadcasts and all of our past episodes. God has been faithful to Assure Women's Center for over 40 years, and the story continues. Join us in Omaha on April 2nd, 2026 for Assure's 40th birthday banquet, featuring Tim Tebow as keynote speaker and Rich Bott as our MC. This will be one of the largest pro-life banquets in the country. We hope you'll join us as we remember yesterday and look ahead to how God will transform Assure's future. Learn more at firststeptolife.com. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on Bott Radio Network.